sorry. Welcome to the RAC's August 3rd meeting for 2016. And I do know that we have Bob out of the country. Val sent us a postcard from Bordeaux, so guess what she's doing. And Christine got sick today, and Lorraine's sister died, and they lived together. They did, and she died suddenly last week. So she's actually going to try to get here, but not sure. She had a meeting that was quite a ways away this afternoon. So I do appreciate you all being here. I just want to take a minute to talk about the agenda. We hope tonight we'll have a lot more time to discuss your ideas, recommendations. We have the one presentation. Because we have only one public commenter, correct?
Correct.
I'm going to do that first, and then other than that, we'll follow the agenda. So any objection to the agenda as described, as written, except for the public comment first? Hearing no objection, I'll consider that approved. So a little background information. Last year, and many of you were not members last year, but those of you who were, we had a presentation from Jordan Holt, who's with us tonight, and we got a sneak peek at a brand new metric for travel time, and we had an opportunity to see it before the rest of the world, or much of the rest of the world. I'm sure there were internal staff people that knew all about it. But at the board meeting last week, I heard Mr. Riederfeld announce that it had gone live, or whatever you want to call it, the day before. And so Jordan is here to give us an update on that for a few minutes. And if we have some questions, that's great too. So have at it.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for having me.
Oh, after I announced the agenda, you guys all let me get away with ignoring it. I'm sorry. No. Oh, he didn't turn it in then, perhaps. Yes.
We have
for since. I don't know if you've done public comment before, but you do get a couple minutes, a total of two, and you can, it's your turn if you are finished with your snack there, and and if you want to come up to the microphone up at the front here, and maybe Joseph, if you can just kind of point, he needs to have the light on, and or that she'll help. Thank you. If you would identify if you're speaking for yourself or on behalf of an organization or group or something.
I'm speaking for myself. Just a few brief things. I just want to comment. I think the new CEO is doing a fabulous job with SafeTrack, the search, and just the things that he's outlaid for the system. I would like to see maybe for a smart trip, the transfer, instead of giving us 2 hours, maybe considering 3 hours. And, there was a concern about WMATA's policy on its employees. It's quite discriminatory. I think that needs to be looked into. That's all I have.
Thank you. May I ask for one clarification? When you talk about, I have heard others mention a concern about the two-hour window that's allowed for transfers, especially because of SafeTrack and things are taking a long time. And I think that's relevant, although I'm not really sure how that works because the buses aren't part of SafeTrack. But anyway, were you referring to permanently or just because of the safety?
Yeah,
okay, thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you for coming to our meeting. Appreciate it. Okay, Jordan, I'm sorry for that false start. Go right ahead.
All right. Well, I'm Jordan Holt. I am a senior performance analyst in the Office of Performance. And as Barbara mentioned, I was here about 8 months ago. I actually looked it up today. It was almost 8 months exactly, the December meeting, where I talked a bit about some new performance metrics we were putting in place that were more customer-focused. On the rail side, we call kind of one of them rail customer travel time, and that's something we report system-wide in our quarterly vital signs report. We introduced it last March, and then we're about to come out with a quarter two report, and it will be in there as well. But then kind of a corollary to that is My Trip Time, which we launched last week, and it's available for registered Smart Trip customers, and basically it shows you your own personal on-time performance score for all rail trips that you've made in the last 90 days. So that's what I wanted to talk to you about. I was going to demo using my own kind of registered Smart Trip account, My Trip Time, walk you through it, and I'd love to answer any questions you have. Also, any feedback you have would be great, and any advice you have on how to further market it to customers would also be most welcome. Basically, anything is most welcome, but those in particular I'm looking for. I have been kind of following it. Some blogs have posted. Generally, comments have been fairly positive. You know, I think people find that it does reflect kind of their experience, which actually was one of the main reasons we tried to do this, is because we have historically reported on kind of train on-time performance. So basically, do our trains come as frequently as we say they do? But we hear a lot from customers that didn't always reflect their own experience. Maybe a train came, but it was too crowded and they couldn't get on. Or we often report at a very high level, a system-wide level, which is appropriate for the board and senior managers who need to take that view, but not so relatable to customers. So you may have had a really bad trip, but because we're averaging it across, you know, aggregating all trips across the whole system, it doesn't really show up that much. So one of our goals with this measure was to provide more personalized information. Another is that we hope it can be used to kind of track the impact of our rebuilding efforts on your own commute. You know, as you know, we've embarked on SafeTrack. I'm sure it has or will affect many of you. And while that will probably hurt your on-time performance in the short term, hopefully it will create a more safe and reliable system in the long term. Before I do the demo, a brief kind of overview of how it works. Basically, you know, when you tap into the rail system, you tap your Smart Trip card, that records a date and time stamp. And when you tap out, it also records a date and time stamp. The reason it records a date and time stamp is because we need to know how much fare to charge you, because our fare varies by time of day and how far you go, so that's why it records that. But what we realized is that also tells us how long it took you to get from station A to station B. And what we can do is compare that to how long it should take you to make that trip if the system were operating normally. And based on that, we can tell you whether you were on time or late, and we can aggregate that up into a score. So what percent of the time were you on time, and what percent of the time were you late? So that's basically kind of how it works. So Joy, if you could just click login. So this is only available on our Smart Trip website, so you have to register your Smart Trip card to see it. So if you could click on the first one, employee ID, if you all didn't know, our employee IDs are actually Smart Trip cards. So so that's why it says employee ID. Yep. So now when you log into your Smart Trip website, this is what you'll see. This middle part where it says Metrorail 3-month travel summary, you see May 2nd through July 30th, that's My Trip Time. So my on-time score is 87%. I've only made 30 trips. I will admit I've been riding my bike a bit more this summer. And then my total miles traveled are 108. So just this is a rolling 3-month period. So right now it's showing May 2nd through July 30th. When I log in tomorrow, it'll show May 3rd through July 31st. There is a slight delay in, you know, today's August 3rd, but we only see through July 30th. That's because, you know, most of the data transmits instantaneously from our fare gates to our server, but occasionally we have some laggards coming through. So we did a delay of 3 days to make sure we had the most complete set of information. All right, so Joy, if you could do the click here for more information. Okay, so here we get a bit more detail. The information at the top is still the same, that 87%. Just so you know, that is based on all trips. That's based on every single one of those 30 trips I made in the last 3 months. And then you see a table there, and that provides a bit more detail for the trips that you frequently make. So this is a subset of that 87% up there of those 30 trips. So these are only trips that I've made 5 or more times in the past 3 months. As you can probably guess, I live near Columbia Heights, and I work here at the Jackson Graham Building, which is near Gallery Place. So that's my my commute. So, you know, it looks like my morning commute in from Columbia Heights to Gallery Place is a little better than my commute home. I'm 92% on time versus 89% on the way home. And then it breaks it down by number of trips. My fastest time, my average time, and my slowest time for that range, or for that 90 days. And then if you see, you don't have to do this, Joy, but under the slowest time, there's more info. If you click on that, it'll take you to the daily service report archives, so you can try and see what happened on that day to maybe make you a little late. So the last column there is this WMATA expected travel time range. So what is that? That is basically what your trip should be if service were operating normally. And the reason it's a range, you can think of the low end of the range is like that perfect trip, the like mysterious perfect trip where you walk into the station and the train is just arriving. You don't have to wait, and you get on and it's not crowded. And then you get off and like you, the station's not crowded and you can walk out. So it's basically, that's just the time that you're on the train. So here it's 7 minutes. That's literally per our schedule how long the train trip, it takes the train to travel between Columbia Heights and Gallery Place is just 7 minutes. So that's the fastest I could ever go, 7 minutes. As you can see, I have not achieved that. I got around 9 minutes, but 7 minutes would be the fastest. The top end of the range basically assumes that I just missed that train. You know, you're about to tap in and you hear the doors chiming and the train is leaving, right? So it assumes I have to wait that full, we call it a headway, the full kind of scheduled time between the trains. So between Columbia Heights and Gallery Place, I can take a green line, a yellow line, or a rush plus line. It's during the peak period. And those come kind of on a strange schedule every 2, 4, or 6 minutes. But if I just miss one and I have to wait that full 6 minutes, that's kind of what that assumes. And then it adds also a minute on each end, a minute at Columbia Heights and a minute at Gallery Place to let me walk from the platform to the fare gate. Because occasionally, you know, I may wait for an elevator. These are, Gallery Place is a bigger station, so it takes about the full minute. Columbia Heights is probably a little faster, but we basically add a minute on each end to that. So I'm late if my time is higher than that top end of the WMATA expected time range. So you see on the AM peak on May 17th, it took me 18 minutes. That's more than the 7 to 16 minutes I said it should take me, so I was late on that day. So that's pretty much it. We are not adjusting the expected travel time range for SafeTrack. It is what it is. You know, we have purposely reduced service, but that doesn't mean you're on time. It still means you're late, right? So so that will get adjusted around twice a year as we adjust our schedule twice a year. So, or anytime we officially change our headways, that would get, like the board approves if it's changing our service standards, that would get changed. But that's pretty much it. You guys, I'll open it up for questions. Again, I'd love any initial feedback you have or any thoughts about how to get the word out to more customers that this exists.
So
Sometimes I forget that we can offer our public to ask for, to give comments, not necessarily questions, but just comments. Do we have anyone from the public that would like to do that? Okay, come on up, Kenneth. You know the drill.
My name is Kenneth Mitchell. I was wondering, regarding like these statistics, and they said they're not adjusted for SafeTrack, does that mean that, like, you know, they're going to take these rubrics for this based on, oh, it's supposed to, you know, based on the data here and apply it to something, or is it kind of like a, I guess, a waiver type period where, like, you're not going to use the data because SafeTrack kind of skews the data one way or the other?
No, that's a great question. We'll still use the data, and we still will report the data. And at a system-wide level, we're working it out. So, you know, at a system-wide, like quarter one, we reported that only 74% of our customer trips were on time, and you know, about 5% were 10 or more minutes late. So we're doing those calculations now for the second quarter. But what we'll also be able to say is, okay, 70% of customer trips were late, and about 10% of that was due to SafeTrack. So we're tracking it so that we can track, you know, so we understand the impact of SafeTrack and other rebuilding efforts on customers. But in terms of what you see personally, just because we are doing SafeTrack, it's still, you're still probably late, later than what you, your trip is longer than what you would expect under normal operating circumstances. So, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else from the public? Come on up, Catherine. This is a former RAC member who left us for the flimsy excuse that she was offered some wonderful thing in Berlin.
So now my baseline is the U-Bahn, which does not necessarily bode well for WMATA. Just a quick question that maybe a question that some of y'all are going to ask. What do you plan to do with this data, other than just track it and look at it and say, some people have it rough, some people do better than others?
Yeah, so we're still, I will admit, we aren't using it probably to its fullest extent yet. This is still new to us. But several ways we can use it are, you know, one is to track the impact of SafeTrack and maybe see, you know, if we have different ways of kind of doing our schedule or doing bus bridges. Is that, how does that impact customers? Is there kind of a more optimal way to do this? Others are to look at, you know, another potential way is to also look at ways to optimize our scheduling by looking at kind of where it's taking customers more time. Other ways that we've talked about doing it is to better understand the impact of when we do have a service disruption, like say we have a rail break. What does that mean in terms of impact on customers? Obviously, like, I think we intuitively know that's a lot worse than, say, you know, potentially a signal problem. So it's a way for us to better kind of rank order and prioritize potentially investments in terms to better understand their impact on customers. So, yep.
Any other member of the public? I'd like to also introduce another person who has come in and quietly sat in the background of the public area. Would you like to introduce yourself? Yeah. Hey, come on up. We'll let you go first. We appreciate your being here.
This right here.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the things that I started on the board actually 1 year ago, so in July, and I felt that the measure that was currently being used, which was sort of more tied to the schedule, really wasn't, you know, what people cared about. I mean, you know, you tap in when you tap out, how long is it taking? And while, and I have been talking actually with staff about not as much just SafeTrack, but just more generally speaking, that this tool, when you're asking, the woman was asking a question about how this would be used. To me, this is at the heart of the customer satisfaction, you know, because once we know what the period of time is that is supposed to be the trip, the question is that going to work for riders, right? And if it's not working for riders, if it's unacceptable to riders, we're going to have to do some things to change it. This is not a SafeTrack thing to me. I mean, it really wasn't. This is before SafeTrack was started. You know, it's much bigger, it's much more global than that, and it really is about the meeting the expectations and perhaps exceeding, I'm hopeful, first we got to meet them, but meeting the expectations of riders on reliability. One of the things that has been the biggest blaring thing to me is that people see the system as not being reliable. 65% is the customer satisfaction score. As long as it's like that, which is the reality, right? I mean, people are not happy with the service. This to me is the measure that helps get us, that staying and paying attention to how we're doing against this measure is the best way from an operational standpoint for us to start to regain the customer satisfaction of the riders and actually meet their needs. You know, that's what matters. How long is it actually going to take me from when I leave my house to get to my office, and can I be assured on every day? Going to be problems, but on most days that this is going to happen. And that's what, to me at least, this is about, and why I felt like this was important from the beginning. I'm excited about having this be one of the measures that we are now looking at. And so I just, when you're talking about it, you asked the question, I just, you know, felt like just jumping in on that. And thank you again for all of your service. And I apologize, when I first came, this is actually 1 year. Like, the first time I came here, nobody actually knew who I was. I sat in the back then, too. Nobody knew.
I was sitting there,
which I'm going to go back and do again, because that's what I prefer to do, to hear sort of, like, what you all, and we went to dinner, and we talked, not with some of you.
The Maryland delegation.
Yes, with some of you. We went and we talked about it, Patrick as well, sort of the... What you all are bringing forward to the board. And one last thing. In the paper and stuff like that, you know, there's been this thing about, you know, the board not appreciating the feedback from the RAC and from riders. It's just not true. You know, the board members are really, they listen, they hear, they read voraciously. I mean, all of the material, they take in the feedback. Does it mean that you can change everything in a day or do this? I mean, no. I mean, that's not realistic. But it is absolutely, for me, absolutely critical that we hear from this group, from the accessibility group as well, and all riders. This is a business, a service business. We have to hear from and know what's working or what's not working for our customers, the riders. So thank you all for your service. It is not in vain. I mean, it's appreciated. It does feed into policy and discussions that we have for certain. So thank you very much. I'll go back
thank
to my
Thank you
seat.
For your words, both on the speaker and our role. Thank you. I know you do listen. I know that. So we have all these other RAC members. We're going to have a few minutes for questions. We do have a very, very full agenda, as we always do, because we have a couple of presentations from within our own group. But I will go around the table. Why don't we start here with Will? One question each, of course. You know the rule. One, not part 1A, 1B, 1C. I know that trick.
I don't pull tricks here. And I was going to say that if Barbara hadn't called out Malcolm, I was. Jordan, I was just going to say that you have a very short commute with one line, and a lot of the rest of us have multiple lines we have to cross. So just you know, pointing that out. So, but I mean, I didn't have anything specific. I did see that there was the export to Excel, which I was curious about that and why might want to do that.
So I'll admit, the export to Excel is not as great as I had hoped. Like, on my initial requirements for this, I wanted you to be able to export every single trip of yours so you could do your own analysis, and we've run into some internal constraints to not be able to do that, particularly from what I've been told is the memory that it would take to build such a huge table that the website would reference. It's not there yet, so it is kind of one of my longer-term goals to be able to do that, because I think that would be ultimately a big use to people. Right now, if you click on export to Excel, it just exports that table. I'll admit, that's not great, and that's not where I want it to be. But I wanted to be able to get something out in the hands of customers, some information that they could use, and not hold it up while we worked that out.
Thanks.
Behind the scenes. Sita.
Hi. I just want to say this. I love this as a writer, and I'm going to go home and play around with this with my own selection card tonight. One suggestion, if you were looking for stuff, it may be cool if, I don't know if this is feasible from a technological standpoint, but to make some sort of, you know, interactive visualizations of your data that you can play around and see, for example, during the day, what times of the day am I more likely to be, you know, late, for example, or what particular routes, sort of metadata analyzing all of your, all of the trip times. And then the quick question I had for you is this available for bus schedules?
So on the bus side, not yet, but it's something we're working on. The bus is a bit more of a conceptual challenge because, we know where you start and where you finish. In bus, we know where you start, but we don't know where you finish. Actually, we may be reaching out to you. So we're trying to, I just had a meeting today, trying to think through, from a customer perspective, is, enough to let you choose your stops and see kind of the reliability between those stops, choose your stops in a time frame, and you can see the reliability that way. It's going to be a little harder for us to give you like personalized information, but it's something that we're working on.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Jim.
This was more on the aggregate data levels. It's like, see, on the Planet Metro website, they'd have a number of data downloads, information related to this. If there was an expectation that this information would also be equally available.
That is a goal, is that we want to do a dump of, okay. Of course, we would strip out any sort of personally identifiable information, right. So no smart trip numbers, but a dump of, right. Basically individual trips and travel times, and potentially the kind of on time or late flag, because we'd love for kind of the developer community and people to play with it, and we could learn, I think.
But there's also not a planned date?
There's not a planned date for that, but I'm working closely with the Planet Metro team.
I do have one more technical question.
Okay.
Since this is smart trip card users, is that the entire universe of passengers, or are there any people out there that this doesn't capture?
Nope, since we got rid of paper cards, it's everyone.
Okay.
But it's you can't see it if you're not registered for it to have your
just in terms of the comprehensiveness of the data, that there's nobody out there right in the system that wouldn't be captured through this. Okay.
Yep. Everyone is captured, even employees.
Right. Okay.
Because our IDs are smart trip cards.
Right.
So now that we don't have paper, everything is captured.
Okay.
Joe.
Okay. My questions also have to do. Oh.
Oh, did you, Patrick? Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, sure.
I just.
Okay. Sure. I'm Joe. Thanks, Jordan, for being here. In terms of I have my smart trip card registered. If I go online, do I have to opt into this, or everything, all of my trips, starting from when to when, starting from last week, or just every single ride that I've ever taken?
Just
previously?
The last 90 days.
90 days. Oh, yeah, 3 months, right?
Last 3 months.
Okay.
But, yeah, it'll automatically show up. You don't opt in now.
Okay.
That if you register your card, you will see it.
Gotcha. And it's great. Is there an opt-out feature by any chance? Not that anyone would want to necessarily do that, but and I think WMATA would love people onto also, because, yeah, just, and what happens to the data after the 3 months?
Okay, we're up to three now.
Okay, sure.
We had not thought about an opt-out. It's basically,
it's just,
you know,
there,
it's,
and you
just
can go
there.
Get it or not.
If that's,
or you
something
can ignore
we get a lot of requests for, I guess maybe we could look into that. And after the 3 months, I mean, we store data for multiple years. So we have only figured out on time versus late for trips since January of 2016. We haven't backdated. We have data before January of 2016, but we haven't gone back that far. So since January 2016, we have started rating every single trip as on time or late. Frankly, we chose a three-month period because of this concern about the size. It's, you know, it's a lot of transactions and it's a lot of data, you know, and so to store it in a way that the, and not slow down the website is what I've been told. We had to limit it to a three-month period. When I started this project, I had all these like grand ideas, like visualization. You can choose your dates and all that, and I had to scale it back a little bit in terms of kind of what was feasible right now, and then thinking about phasing in these things over time.
Thank you. Patrick.
Thank you. So you have actually three systems. You have bus, you have rail, and you have Metro Access. Ever thought of applying this to Metro Access?
that would, I think, be really
challenging
as well. But I think once we think through how to do it on bus, I think we could probably do it on Metro Access.
Very interesting. AAC would love to see it. If when you get to that point, this is good here. Applying it to Metro Access would solve a lot of problems.
Thank you, Clarence.
Hi. So I think one of the things just in terms of helping you is just like as we can find ways of advertising this better to like whether it's ad marketing in Metro stations, like come and see what your own score is or stuff like that, kind of like the Metro Forward campaign. It'll just help people, and as people want, will demand more ability to visualize it. That'll, you know, if that needs, helps you get more resources to do that, that'd be helpful. The question I have is about how do you, that number that you talk about at the macro level, does it measure just when a train is scheduled to arrive at a stop, or does it measure sort of this point of the amount of people on that train who started at this location and who's getting off at this location? Because I can see where there can be a gap between the train might arrive on time at where it's supposed to, but the amount of people who it's late for is different. And then the question being like how, I think, as getting to your point, I think to an individual, that number is more practical than the train itself.
Right, so this actually helps us now. We used to just measure the train, but now we measure people. So every person, every trip is rated on time or late, and at the macro level, what we report is 74% of customers being on, customer, basically 74% of trips were on time. That's 74% of individual trips were on time. And so we can break that out by service period, by line, by, you know, we've also started looking at it by certain, we call them OD pairs, or like origin and destination. Here it's Columbia Heights and Gallery Place, so we can look at the variability of that trip for people. We can also look at, you know, if we do have an incident, a service disruption, it happened at 7 a.m., you know, now we say expect residual delays. But we should actually, we have the data to tell you how long those residual delays for that type of incident normally last, and that can improve our customer communication. So that's type, it's really powerful data. And honestly, right now, we want to start using it more. We've spent a lot of time these past few months just setting up the systems so that we can start using it. And now we're kind of at that tipping point where we can start using it to inform those types of things and decisions that we make.
Thank you. Colin.
This is cool. I, at one point before my membership on the RAC, attempted to take all of my trip data from my Smart Trip account and put it into an Excel spreadsheet to try to analyze it in this way and determine what my on-time performance was. So it's great. I know this isn't really your department, but I'm going to say it anyway. This seems like, given the fact that WMATA doesn't currently have a policy for when to refund passengers' money, but instead does it on a case-by-case basis, that this could be a pretty objective tool for determining whether any given case warrants a refund. So perhaps you could communicate that to your colleagues in the customer service department.
I will. Just so you know, the call center, we've built them a tool so that they can see this information as well. So for when you call them with, you know, talking about how late your trip was, you can give them their smart trip number and they can see this view as well.
I have a question. I get a lot of alerts. I'm trying to remember, did this go out in an alert to all the smart trip people?
I believe it was, we tweeted it, and we had a press release.
Okay, there was a press release, and I saw it.
And the board and Mr. Wiedefeld announced it.
It was, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. Did you have,
yeah. Up and down, so I just held it down.
I tried mine on the legacy site and the beta site, and it works. I agree with Colin. I think it's pretty cool. You mentioned that you had to strip away some things that because you just couldn't get it all done here. Now, what is the next functionality that you would like to see added to this?
Honestly, I think it depends on what the customer. I want it to be driven by customer demand. You know, as a Metro rider myself, but also kind of more of a data nerd, I'd like the export to Excel everything, but that may not be what everyone, you know, I've also, we did some initial outreach with the Amplify community to do some beta testing of this and get some feedback, and, you know, some people wanted to see kind of themselves compared to everyone else, so that's another option. Like, you know, my average time is 12 minutes, but you know, is that, am I fast or am I slow? You know, what's the real average time for that journey compared to other customers? Others wanted to see like visualizations. So really in kind of in a listening period right now, and I think after it's out for a few months and we people can use it to circle back and get some more feedback. And then try and see where we are in terms of funding and other priorities.
That was a great answer. Whatever the customers say they want. Obviously tailored, I mean, checked against the magnitude of the effort to do it. Yeah.
Thanks. Well, this is meant for customer. I mean, we honestly, it was generated in part from customer feedback, so it's really meant to be useful to customers.
I owe Joe a favor, so I'm going to have to give him a second try.
Oh, sorry. It's just one quick question. Is there a way to make this data instantaneous in that when you exit out of the tram, the time is listed right there, maybe? Or
that's a good idea.
Wow.
Like you said, occasionally there's like a delay in getting the information from the fare gate. Honestly, in terms of our internal servers, it's often like a delay of like, I mean, I can see the data, not immediately either. So
you'd also have to have the fair gate program to be able to do that.
Sorry, you wanted to see it like on the fair. I misunderstood. Yeah. You wanted to see it on the fair gate. Maybe if we get a new fair gate. If we can upgrade our fair gate, which
we want
40
that
years
too.
Old, maybe. But that's actually a cool idea.
Thank you very, very much for your time, for the work that you've done on this. And I know that when Andrea has presented this also to the board, it's, you know, she talks about how she's shown it to us and listened to us. And it's great. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for your time and your comments. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. one thing I forgot to do with public comment was mentioned that we received to the RAC comments mailbox just this afternoon a lengthy feedback on the beta site And so I got it just this afternoon. I was going to forward it to you, Colin, because I've already enlisted the PPP to take on the challenge of providing RAC feedback as a collective entity. So that was the one thing that came into our mailbox. So on to exciting things like approving minutes. We have the minutes in front of you. And is there a motion to accept the minutes as written?
I motion to accept the minutes as written.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Thank you. I forgot to see if we got, did we end up with a quorum? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. We did. I think the last one in did it. Okay. Thank you. Chair's report. Okay. I think my chair report is for July is in the, it is in there. It is also posted on the web every month, too, if ever it's not in the packet. I do want to give, talk about some highlights from the board meeting. So Malcolm will probably know all of this before I ever say any of it. But we had a lot of meetings in July and a lot of decisions made, some of them about development, capital, real estate. There's going to be a hearing in September about King Street Station bus paths and revamping of that area. There was a very lengthy discussion about capital needs. You know, capital budget is a huge part of the what happens at WMATA. I mean, there's so many, many things to invest in, whether it's new rail cars or whatever. And there's a very comprehensive system that they have adopted to identify, inventory what capital items they have and what their needs are going to be. So that was discussed. Those of you that haven't been here a full year may not know that every fall we have an annual bus hearing process, and you'll hear about it. And I would encourage all of you, if you haven't been to one especially, to go. You'll hear a lot about the proposed bus changes for the year. There was also a report on the emergency drill. There was a very interesting report to the Finance Committee about benchmarking, about various measurements for WMATA and other similar transit systems throughout the country. That was very informative. And again, these are all on the website. I'm just giving you some highlights that you can either decide, gee, that sounds interesting, I'd like to go read about it, or whatever. Very extensive presentation about bus safety, and that the driver's side mirrors that the bus drivers use, there are blind spots, and that it was a very visual. It was showing, we got to see what the driver sees at every point in a turn, and it was very informative. And there are some more some creative manufacturers that are trying to deal with that, and so that we can take advantage of, you know, technology that still can do what we need to have it do, but also, you know, make sure we have a minimal amount of blind spots. I didn't realize, although I can picture it, if you've been on buses very much, you often probably see them do this kind of rotating around, and I actually do that sometimes when I'm driving, but that's what it's all about. They're trying to see beyond the blind spots. They're trying to get the view on this side of a pillar or whatever. We got a lot of statistics about the safety statistics for the second quarter, updates on red signal violations, which are definitely a concern. They're not, it's, you know, running a red light for a train operator is a very serious offense. The GM at the board meeting talked about the Surge 3 and all of the statistics about the progress they've made, and talked about the launch of My Trip Time that you just heard about. You've probably heard that there have been discussion of consideration of selling this building, headquarters building, and that's been in the news. And also SelectPass talking about the success of the pilot, and I can't totally remember if it's a plan for or the intent is that they're going to expand that. And I don't know if that's a firm thing that we have any date on or anything, but they want to do more price points, and which is, I'd love to see that. Mr. Augustine gave me an open to talk about. We did have, if you all get the media reports, you know that the Metro is in the news pretty much every day. And that is usual. That is usual. As usual, it's in the news. It was in the news today. But not as usual, the RAC was in the news today. And I don't know how many of you have seen that article about the RAC in the news, in the paper. I've seen it. Not very many. You've seen it. Okay, fine. I think the most important... It was black and white. Come on. It's a newspaper. It's the most important thing for me to say and for you to hear from my point of view is this, that because of the dedication of all of you around the table that have volunteered to give some of your time to the RAC, that the RAC is strong, and it's stronger than it's ever been in the time I've been around here, at least my 4+ years. And we may not have a million Metro writers that know all about us, but the people on the board, like Malcolm, and people on the staff that are very aware of our existence, well, like Jordan, you know, they're very aware of who we are, and they listen to us, and they take action whenever they can. It doesn't mean our wish is their command. That is not how it works in this world, in any world, in the companies you work in, wherever. There are a lot of people, the board and the staff both listen, and there are also very many people in the transit community in this region that know about us and know that people listen to us. We are strong. We are not struggling. We are improving every year. We are not declining. If any of the RAC members, once you do get your hands on the article, if you want to discuss the details of it, please feel free to tell me. There were several statements in there that were stated as facts. They were not true. And there are statements that were totally inconsistent with facts that I presented. And with that, you can probably understand that then there would be some conclusions drawn that I believe those conclusions were flawed at best. And, I'm not saying that the world is perfect in every way. I encourage you all, if you do have concerns that you'd like to discuss, you can talk to me, you can talk to your chair, your vice chair for your whatever you want. You all have my phone number, you all have my email address. I have two phone numbers you have for me. And you all know where to find me. Find me here at 6 o'clock before our meetings or after the meetings. And I just want you all to know that you're doing valuable work, and I know it's hard to always find time for the things that you want to do to contribute, because I know you all care about it, and I don't want to detract from that, and I feel very good about what we do. So any questions from you or comments about that you want to publicly, you can talk to me in person or whatever. So anything? Thaddeus?
Yeah, I wanted to, thank you for your comments, and wanted to, state that I think it's important that the RAC is not one person or just a few people, but it's a group. And I think that it's good that people come and that people go, and that to some fresh ideas, you know, they come all the time. And I think that it's really important. And from that aspect, I think that the group is operating as it should. And again, not every day is a great day, and not every time progress happens on the way that we would like it to happen, but my personal opinion is that that's just how things work sometimes, and we know how important the RAC is, but we also know our place in the world. So I just take 2 seconds to say I'm glad to be here for the time that I was here, and reiterate what Barbara said, and thanks to everybody for their work as well.
You know, you reminded me of something I meant to say and I didn't. We have, for all of the 4 years I've been here, had turnover during the year. I personally started in May or something because somebody had left. And I really do think that the recruiting that is done and that the time that Joy now and others before her put into the selection process find some really great people that can serve on this. They're the best and the brightest of the people that are interested in transit. And those people often get new jobs. They often get called to other cities to take work. We've had, in this last year, we lost somebody to Berlin. We lost, you know, someone to some other country I can't even remember, in Alabama and Nashville and all over the place. And it's, you know, we could have people that would stay for their full term and another again, but I think there is, as you said, there's a value to some of the transition. It can be, it can might feel like one step back here and there, but I think that just comes with the territory of people like you or people that are in demand and things happen. So thank you. Clarence, comment?
I do have a question on the arbitrator's report, but I would just say that I think just my time serving here, it's getting a better sense of how the process overall works, and it is a sausage-making process where it's grueling and it's sometimes not pretty and it doesn't necessarily move at the speed that you need it or want it to move, but it is a very large institution with a lot of different constituencies, and the fact that it makes and creates a space for the RAC, for as to advocate on behalf of riders, I think is really important. I think it's just us constantly trying to find what is not the right balance, to use that word, but like what's the correct amount, where the, you know, the tension point where we can push where we need to push, and then at the same time to disseminate information back down to riders. And I think that's where we see our role. So we're always at the points, you know, having to be a shield and a sword on both sides of there. So I'd say, thanks all the work that people are doing.
You made it. One thing you said reminded me of something a really smart person said named Colin. He said, you got to pick your battles. And yeah, there are things that we are firmly behind and must have and we'll go on a long time about. There are others that you think, you know, I see the point. That's probably not a battle we're going to. And Will, you're going to be our last one.
Just quickly, you know, one of the things I look at too is for the people that do leave before their term is up, sometimes because they're disheartened with the way the process works, is that it's still a learning, you know, event for them, because now they can say when they go back out into the world that, well, it's not as easy as I thought it was to make change, you know, because of the fact that I've seen it. So I think that even though there's a loss to us as the RAC, there's still a plus to us as well, because they should, I would hope, be going out to educate their small piece of the world to let them know that it's not as easy as you think it is to make the change. You can't snap your fingers and make it happen. So I think it's a plus too.
That reminds me again. one more thing. No, I got an email this afternoon from a former chair, Carol Walker, that most of you don't know. You probably saw her, even though you were a member. But and she said that she, I think nobody has any sense of it's hard to get a sense on the outside of what we're trying to do. And anyway. So thank you for listening to me, and I'm going to move on to, oh, I left something out in the board report. Well, it's sort of connected to the board report. As you all may have heard, I would assume lately, the word has come out that, you know, Mr. Wiedefeld really believes that we need to keep not have the night service on rail, the after midnight service. And many of us, beyond SafeTrack, is it on a long-term basis. Some of us in small groups have discussed just even when SafeTrack started and concern about it happening even during SafeTrack. And you, on the one hand, obviously you can see that the more hours you have service, the fewer hours you have to do the track work that we're behind on. On the other hand, there are riders out there that are using the service. And I had a conversation after the meeting, because Mr. Wiedefeld, I believe, did bring that up at the board meeting. And I had a conversation with Jim Hamry, who is in charge of the bus service that we have. And he was excited at the prospect of coming to speak to us. And because I approached him about if that is something that's inevitable, that if it is going to happen, then can we look at a bus alternative for the riders who've been served by rail? Can we do something? And we talked about their challenges. It's like there's not always a road that parallels a track, but that he's very excited about doing that sort of thing, and he wants to come talk to us, so we'll be talking about getting him in here. He was actually willing to come this time tonight. I think it's something that we can look at, and it doesn't necessarily have to be as far away as 2018 in terms of budget cycle. He's always asked to have revenue neutral plans, but if we're cutting some service on the rail and adding it to the bus or something, then that's something to look at. I have three signs up, and so Colin, that's the end of my chair report, by the way, unless you remind me of something else.
Well, I think this is an especially important policy proposal that we're hearing. I don't know if we have enough time scheduled in today's meeting to really dig into it, but I think that this is something that we really ought to put a lot of careful thought into, because this is a policy change that would have, you know, significant impact on riders.
I agree, and I failed to mention that there is going to be a public hearing that would be on that specifically, so we'll have an opportunity not only to hear what the others say, but to speak.
Right. So, but in the meantime, I think we ought to be having conversations within our respective committees and you know, as a body, about what that means, what the alternatives could be, et cetera, so that we're prepared to offer, you know, some constructive feedback.
Great. Thank you. Yes. Clarence? That will be the bus hearing. There's an annual, I can't remember what month it usually is, but there's one every
year.
Oh, they did too. They kind of gave us a preview of it. They always present to us because they like, and it's, for those of you that are new, it's quite impressive because it doesn't matter what line you mention and what stop, he knows the answer. He knows what you're talking about, and he's got a mind full of bus stops and bus routes. Yeah. Cisa.
Echoing Colin's sentiments, I was wondering if sort of during the next month and by the next RAC meeting, we could, if people are interested, develop some sort of letter or official sort of position of the RAC on the proposal and this tool we developed with the board. Just because I having heard a lot from riders, knowing personally myself that this is a sort of a high priority issue, that would impact a lot of people. I'd just like to ask about the possibility.
Sure.
Of
absolutely.
If that's something that we can, if we sort of, which committee would that start in, or how we get started drafting?
I think of it as customer service, but I mean, I don't care. It's whoever wants to. Yeah. If we have, if we want to even have, I don't know, or a special committee for that. If, you know, we can do that. So, why don't you be thinking about it if you have any specific ideas? But I think that's a great idea.
Okay. That's something we can send to the board, hopefully.
Are you pointing at Tita?
Yeah, I was going to recommend that he draft something.
Yeah.
With pleasure.
He drafted the last thing.
Yeah, no, with pleasure, yeah.
Thank you. And Jim, you're the last speaker here, or the last commenter.
Well, I would just suggest that, you know, the first step to sort of getting to understand a problem is to get some information about it. So perhaps also one step here would be for us to request, what data does WMATA have regarding late night ridership?
It has lots of data. Yes, that's a good idea.
And particularly, I think, because it point out all these issues and problems, that it may even come down to, like, you know, which of the lines have the greatest need or ridership. So if we have to set any kind of priorities.
Sure, like the red line might be, well, if it's, you know, there's I think two kinds of riders that I think of traditionally with night, the after midnight, it's the people that are doing all the social stuff.
Right.
And it's the people that are going to and from work.
Right.
They may have different commuting patterns totally.
Well, and I know both DC and Montgomery County years have done nighttime economy task forces to encourage more late night activity.
Okay, yeah.
But I guess, again, what I'm saying is that I don't have a real good feel in terms of the different
sure.
metro lines and which might have the greatest ridership needs or whatever.
Yeah.
So that would be a good thing to at least be able to understand as far as where are the priorities for resources.
Right. I think the only caveat, I mean, I'm not going to say anything you don't all know, is that Mr. Wiedefeld has been really very, very clear, and we've all kind of nodded in agreement. Number one is safety, and he
right.
sees the track work as a contributor to the safety.
Okay.
And that's why Safe Track exists, even though it is not in the least bit convenient for everybody that's going through the surge. And so I think we have a big hurdle to
right.
not saying it's impossible, and we have to say how we feel about it, but it is a hurdle that we'll have to
But in
make.
Terms of resource allocation, those two
yeah.
factors in terms of the
no,
safety
I, yeah.
needs of the different lines
right.
as well as the ridership impacts on the different lines.
Yeah.
Kind of right now we don't
yeah.
know either, and so
yeah.
it's feelings at this point.
Thank you. Okay, now we're ready for the meat of this. We're only actually a few minutes behind, believe it or not. The committee reports, Christine went home sick today, so for safety, she just wanted to remind everyone that there is the next emergency drill is on Sunday, August 28th, and as I have to remember to say, it is over the Potomac, not under, and it is the yellow line, and boy, I'm going to be there, and even though I fly in like at 10 o'clock the night before from somewhere, and if you haven't been to one, I encourage you to do that. Great views. Yeah.
Barbara, sorry, do you know what station it's supposed to start
It's
in?
Yellow line, so it would be going.
It could be Lafayette Plaza,
yeah,
right.
Can it, yeah, I don't know which one it's starting at, but yeah, it's between there, so. Honestly, I don't know. We'll all see the recruiting email to say, you know, please join, sign up to do it. So I haven't seen that yet, so we'll probably see it then. I don't know which one. Leadership and governance, just a plug for all committee chairs. Remember, agendas 1 week ahead. So some of you have meetings a week from tomorrow. So, of course, I guess I'm talking to Christine and Will. Remember your agenda. Hmm? Oh, yeah. Sorry. I'm sorry. Okay. Now we have the PPP committee. Mr. Collin has something, and have you already passed it out, or is it?
I mean, I passed it out to the people who were here when I passed it out.
Okay.
I don't know if everyone got it, and I apologize for
we
not.
We have a two-page, two different sheets, but it's two-page.
Not having sent this out electronically earlier, but it was sort of a down-to-the-wire effort.
Oh,
and
yeah.
it's on the screen.
Right.
So,
it's big.
As many of you know, in 2015, the PPP had worked on a proposal for the RAC to have a social media presence. There was some kind of back and forth on that about, you know, whether it was appropriate. There were some concerns from staff.
Actually, we didn't even submit it to them until about it was Christmas week, I think.
Right.
But
yes,
they were internal. They were internal.
Yes.
Concerns.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was submitted in. So a letter was submitted to the board in December.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, sort of less of a recommendation and more of a notification of our intent to do it. Is my understanding. So I've pulled together kind of a little bit of background on that. Actually pulled some language straight from that original proposal to kind of outline what the purposes of the RAC having a social media presence would be. So primarily, you know, gathering feedback from riders, publicizing the RAC itself, better communicating with riders, you know, building trust. But you know, the PPP has been kind of discussing what the best approach to this would be. And you know, we did get kind of conditional approval from the board executive committee, right?
We did get approval.
What's unclear at this point is whether We are limited to one social media platform, but you know, kind of based on our discussions within the PPP, you know, outlined kind of the pros and cons of Facebook and Twitter.
If I can clarify, we said that we would like, logically, we would most likely want to start with Facebook. We discussed, though, other, and we understood that we had approval, and the more I've talked to people, the more I believe we did, because, for instance, the chairman of the board is, he's very active on Twitter, and, you know, anyway, but I haven't been able to successfully get the answer. Tom was out, and I haven't been able to get him. So.
Right. So... so I proceeded with this under the sort of assumption that we might tackle both.
Okay.
I mean, I think the original plan that was developed by the PPP prior to my tenure did sort of phase in, starting with Facebook, which I think, you know, the PPP agreed sort of makes sense because it's a little less fast-paced than Twitter. You know, it allows you to have kind of a static page where you can post things at your leisure. It also allows for multiple account administrators or moderators, whereas, you know, Twitter, we would kind of have to share login information. On the other hand, you know, I see a lot more WMATA-related activity on Twitter than I do on Facebook. You know, there are a couple of pages that, you know, where there is quite a bit of writer interaction, but, you know, I think the bulk of the WMATA conversation is happening on Twitter. That's also, you know, where, you know, WMATA itself is putting out a lot of information. So, you know, I don't think that the PPP felt like, you know, there's really a downside to having a Twitter account as well, aside from the fact that it does potentially require a bit more frequent monitoring and you know, response.
And that was, quite frankly, the board's concern. It was looking out for us.
Sure. Yeah. On the other hand, you know, there's not necessarily a downside to having a Twitter account that doesn't respond immediately to, you know, to every form of input. So, you know, I mean, obviously all of this is sort of up for debate within this body. We did have a few conversations about, you know, some guiding principles for how the RAC would tackle social media. You know, with the primary understanding being that the RAC itself does not represent WMATA or, you know, WMATA policies or positions, and that our primary goal, again, is really to provide another channel for writers to express their concerns, provide suggestions, offer comments on RAC and WMATA initiatives as they're being proposed or rolling out or being implemented. We did sort of recommend that there be a core group established within the RAC itself to kind of manage this effort. I am not necessarily volunteering myself for that. We haven't really gotten that far.
No, that's okay. I was sort of a joke.
But, you know, not only to sort of divide labor, but also so that, you know, as posts are developed, that they can be bounced off of more than one person and vetted before being put out there. Especially if it's something that's fairly content heavy. If it's, you know, really just like an informational piece, kind of reminding folks about a meeting or saying, you know, that, you know, don't forget that SafeTrack Surge 6 open, you know, starts tomorrow, that, you know, that's probably not something that needs to be vetted by a bunch of people. But, you know, more content heavy things, probably, you know, it would be wise to have more than one person lay eyes on it. The other piece is kind of ensuring that, you know, we're directing things that are outside of our purview or above our pay grade, so to speak, to the appropriate channels. So if it's a complaint related to a specific incident, ensuring that we are forwarding that on to the appropriate department within WMATA. If it's an emergency, you know, making sure that people are actually contacting the appropriate authorities, that sort of thing. And, you know, in the case of Twitter, it's very easy to sort of copy a respond saying, you know, you should file a complaint, or perhaps, you know, Metro Rail Info can provide you with some additional information and copy them. So, I mean, that's really the bulk of it. The last piece was really the idea, and I don't remember who this came from within the PPP, but I thought it was a great idea, is having someone within that core group, and maybe it's a rotating responsibility, kind of try to compile the feedback that we're getting, maybe do some synthesis and summary, so that we do have a regular kind of here's what writers are saying in response to X, Y, or Z.
I'm going to let you run the comments. How's that? If you want to.
Starting, if you want to take comments and answer.
Sure. Yeah.
I think this is a good opportunity for us to get started. You got to start somewhere. And a couple of titles, the theme in what I heard and what you talked about is manpower and managing, you know, this type of thing. You know, most of us have either day jobs or other responsibilities and can't, you know, be on top of this all the time. As far as generating comment, content is concerned, you also mentioned, excuse me, some static things about, you know, remembering the meetings and so forth. And that is a good place to put it. As far as directing comments to customer service or whatnot, I'm sure everybody in here, every single person in here is probably more social media savvy than me. But what I have seen on Facebook, I think it's called a pinned post, where you post something and it sticks there, where you say, for customer service issues, go here. Mm-hmm. And that way, if a person reads it, we might not have to say it over and over.
Yep.
So I'm also aware that there are ways that once, you know, and if we decide to go into Twitter, that there are tools where you can integrate the two, where your posts go back and forth. So I think this is a great place to start. In a way that it's not overwhelming to us and we don't freak the board out and, you know, and let people. Oh, I'm sorry, this was the last thing. As far as Twitter, in my opinion, again, the non-social savvy person, can be kind of fast-paced. I wouldn't imagine want to get into back and forth with people. And on Facebook, just like any other social media platform, you say who you are. You develop your theme, your flavor, your content, and the pacing of it. And I think that it'll be controllable in that way.
Clarence?
I'm actually going to take the opposite opinion in terms of going on Facebook versus Twitter, only because I think Facebook is one of those things that you need to have that more activity going than rather being passive to sort of to show and indicate that it's still around. Whereas a lot of the automatic updates that will be happening for the Twitter account, they're just happening automatically, for example. And the big point is, like, as we connect to potentially getting a permanent person in addition to Joy working for the RAC, it's a question of whether or not that's a responsibility in there in terms of when an agenda is posted to the website. A tweet connects, linking back to that, also is sent out over there as well. So that's just ways in which you can automatically have some sort of routine activity that's being fed into it, in terms of also giving our information. And then that core group is thinking about things like how do we add like more engaging posts, like, you know, for the upcoming drill, if someone, you know, takes a picture as we're walking across the Potomac, or doing something to sort of show the work of the RAC, and then connecting those spaces. Because that, I feel, is like the only thing you have to worry about on Twitter is getting 140 characters or the limits in that space. Whereas on Facebook, you're having like your messaging, your posts, and like your comments that are coming back in, or then even like the pictures that you're tagging in for those spaces. I just feel like that's a little bit more work than sort of updating people and keeping it relevant to that kind of information. So trying to think about like where the labor is coming in from, and if we do have another full-time person there, we can more connecting on resources on that end.
I've also been to the PPP meetings, and this is great. And I also believe that we should have both. I think in the 21st century, we can do that, even though there's no personnel dedicated to this necessarily. But Facebook and Twitter, like you said, there are bulk upload mechanisms that can automate these tweets 50 at a time or 100 at a time. Yeah, I think it's definitely doable. And like Thaddeus said, the pacing matters. How we set our editorial calendar, how we end up doing this, sets the pace. And we have some control over that, but it's, I think we have more control than we're thinking. Obviously, there are people that will engage in ways that we don't expect. But I think it's good to have that, and that we're out there, and to be visible and present than absent and letting conversations happen without us. They're going to happen anyway. So I think it's important that we're engaged in this way.
Do you have any particular next steps in mind?
So, I mean, I really, you know, I wanted to run this by the body, get input, if you're still thinking about it, and have input later tonight, tomorrow, next week, you know, let me know. But I think, you know, it seems to me that our next step is, A, to determine what authority we have to proceed and on what platforms, as dictated by the board, and B, you know, it's my understanding that we will also need to work with Ms. Bowersox's department to sort of get the ball rolling on this officially.
Well, we wanted to run it. She asked to run it by her because she could, you know, provide us feedback. I don't think she's in charge. She's not in charge of it. She's an advisor.
Sure. Okay.
And so she was actually just even inquiring about it last night, and I said, hey, good question. It's coming tomorrow.
So, I mean, to the degree that we feel comfortable with this, and I think that Thaddeus had a couple of good additions, you know, I think it's fine to go ahead and forward this to her.
I wasn't sure if this was what you wanted to go to her, or if it was something else. That's fine.
I mean, I don't see why not, as long as everyone else is comfortable with it.
Is there any objection here to speak now? Okay. All right, you can do that.
Okay.
And do you think there's any chance, okay, different sort of subject, but when we said, you know, at the start of the year, or actually it was when these, our newest members came in March, that we wanted to have a safety committee, but we didn't get people to sign up. Do you think there's any chance that we need to, that we'll say, oh yeah, we'll find three people to do it, but then we don't?
That's always possible.
So should we try to do that?
Well, I mean, we've only got 10 of 18 members here today.
I know.
Certainly put out the call. I would suggest doing it via email as well.
Absolutely. No, okay. I think that would be a good thing, because it would be, I do recall that one of the board executive meeting comments was that that they've taken a lot of heat about the lack of response for people tweeting for the WMATA.
Right.
And that they certainly didn't want to see one more entity for people to complain they weren't getting responses to.
So that's a good point, and I think that's a question to raise, which is, to what degree do we engage when writers, you know, raise concerns and complaints? And you know, that's probably something we need to discuss further, because
I think
that people do want some acknowledgement.
Yep.
But I don't know that we're necessarily in a position to say, here's the solution to your problem. So I think, you know, we need to be careful about, again, not representing ourselves as WMATA, while at the same time engaging writers in a manner that ensures that they feel like they're being heard.
Right. There's something between actually telling them what's going to happen, and the other extreme is we acknowledge that you sent us an email. You've sent us a tweet on this time and day, you know, which is the that's just the thing that people know they get, but that's not – doesn't feel like an answer.
Right. And so, you know, Ms. Bowersox's department may actually be very helpful in advising on, you know, what the appropriate responses are. Perhaps this effort will even encourage them to be a little more responsive.
That would be a good idea. Okay. So that's great. Did you have one more thing you wanted to say, Clarence, about this before we proceed to our topic? Are you on the?
The releasing information webinar, now that includes Metro, the other official Metro Twitter accounts or Facebook accounts, setting up and putting out like a press release of saying like, hey, this is now out there. Because I think one of the things that's really difficult is if you just, any of us right now can set up a Twitter account that says it's Durack, but unless it kind of has like that sort of official kind of connection, it'll take time for it to grow and like have people be pointed to it. And all social media networks kind of depend on networks of other things connecting into it. So I think that's in terms of the next step to kind of finding out and come up with some sort of official press release about like that this is happening. And I think in that outlining specifically what the extent and limitations are of these social connection points.
And we could also have like a soft opening, so the press release could happen, you know, maybe a few weeks or a month later, so that people, you know, we could get used to flow and see what we can handle or not. Just a thought.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly open to ideas for how to publicize the accounts once they're established. I'm not sure our press releases are as effective as they once were, but I think we can get the word out in various ways.
I don't know if you want to publicize that it's not banned necessarily, but I think it will be banned, just not with as many people as we would like, because we shouldn't start a platform that we're not going to carry on to
right.
The best possible representation of the rack. So that's what we're going to do.
Okay, how about if you and I talk a little bit about if you want to be a part of whatever with Lynn and so forth, and then some of these other next steps. That's great. Thank you very much for taking the initiative to draft this, and I appreciate it.
Thanks largely to the PPP committee members.
All of whom, those four people last year that got great jobs somewhere else.
Well, yeah, that too. I drew heavily from the resources that were developed
Dan
last year.
Dan and Bonnie. Dan and Bonnie. Right. Okay. On to Budget Committee, Fiscal 2018 Concepts. We have, go ahead. Sitsa and I have worked on this, what he's handing out here, and I want to just talk a little bit about it. We have, keep handing it out, but I did not give anyone from the public an opportunity to comment on the presentation about social media, and if any of you would like to, I'll give you a minute to do that. No one? Okay.
You can tweet it to us later.
Smiling back there.
Check this out to the public.
We've got it up above.
Oh, we have it.
Yeah, I think that's okay. The finance man and a strategic planning man both came to our budget meeting that Clarence chaired a couple weeks ago and gave us a lot of just basic understanding of things that we need to plan for in the budget cycle for 2018, which next July is when fiscal 2018 begins. We are now in fiscal 2017. Did I say that right? Isn't that right, didn't I? Okay. And so it sounds like it's way off, but the timeline is not way off. The first proposal, or the ground rules in the first presentation that finance is going to make to the board is in the month of September. That's next month, because they are off this month, but it's traditionally in September anyway. And so they would love to hear our ideas of what we really are in support of before then. And so we're getting the concepts in front of you tonight to get your feedback so that we can then draft something much more specific that we'll bring back at the next meeting to talk about. And so this is not a list of all the recommendations that we think we should do. These are some concepts of things that we thought of that we've heard people talk about. Seats is going to talk about the fairs, and at the end of that, I'm going to talk a little bit about service things that affect budget, not just the fairs. And I do not ever want to forget that I need to mention that what we have not incorporated here is metro access, because we trust our partners from the AAC and Patrick to take care of metro access. And historically, we agree with what they suggest. Now, there is, right now, today, there is a direct impact, though. What we suggest for fares, there is a formula that's used for metro access fares, and to the extent that relationship days, then anything we do affects them. But there's also occasionally talk about we'll changing that formula. So I don't know, Patrick, if you'd like a comment to make about that briefly.
Yeah, we've tried putting that forward over the last 3, 4, 5 years. So far, we haven't had the formula altered. But I think that the bus and rail fares have been static, so we haven't really had worry about that too much.
True.
It is great that we have this to look at, because we'll be coming up with our own policies also. I think any time that the RAC and AAC can be in sync, particularly going forward with this stuff, is great.
Right. So. And Patrick, I apologize. I don't have, you know, obviously this is not something you can see here. And so you can let us know what we need to do so that you, Seitz is to some extent going to walk us through it, but I don't think he's going to read every box because we just don't have that much time. So, got it. Okay. Have at it, Seitz.
Thank you so much, Barbara. We're very excited to share with you all a draft of the numerous different options for fare reforms that we've brainstormed as potential concepts and ideas that we could potentially recommend to the board. This comes out of a lot of research and brainstorming that we've done, as well as in conjunction with the Budget and Finance Committee. And of course, this is by no means final. As Barbara said, these are just ideas. We'd be happy to hear more input, more ideas, and over the next couple of weeks, getting a sense of where the RAC stands on each of these ideas. Sort of just broadly, I personally feel like we sort of hold a dual responsibility when approaching the idea of the fares and what types of adjustments we may want to recommend. On one hand, we have a responsibility to representing our fellow riders and advocating for their needs. And on the other hand, we have to keep it in the back of our minds our responsibility to helping sustain the Metro and make intelligent, wise choices for the future of the transit system. And balancing both of those needs is something that's really important and imperative when going forward and thinking about each of these fares. Fortunately,
I already had warned him that I was going to interrupt periodically, but the spirit moves me. One thing that was interesting that one interesting comment that the finance and planning guy made to us that I will not forget is that if you think that fares are going to make up the difference in the deficit that we have for next year, forget that. It's not going to be fares. So, you know, I don't even know if $20 a ride would do it. I mean, I don't know. But anyway, so that's a ground rule. We're just trying to do what the riders, what we want to try to do.
Absolutely. And fortunately, the general manager and the board have expressed a strong openness to really look at simplifying the fare structure. And that's a really positive sign, given that the work that we do here and the recommendations we put out may actually, they have a strong chance of being adopted or at least affecting the process in a very substantial way. So we should also take that to heart. It seems like there is a consensus among riders and Metro staff or Metro board alike that the fare system as it stands today is quite complicated and certainly more complex than what we see in other cities across America. If you turn, so if you skip ahead to the third page, you'll see a list of comparison to the 12 or 13 largest other U.S. transit systems and what their subway fares and bus fares look like. The current system for WMATA, as opposed to all of those, is a complex system of something called composite miles. Composite miles are essentially the average between the point to point as the crow flies distance between two stations and the actual distance in the Metro tunnels, and then using that to create a complex formula of how much the fare will be between two different stations. Of course, at peak time and then at off-peak times. So we do get a lot of questions from especially tourists coming in town trying to ask, you know, well, what is the Metro fare? They have a hard time grappling with that concept, and that's something that, you know, we can definitely keep in mind as we look at these. So I won't take too much time, but to go over sort of the main ideas in these few pages. So the first thing we looked at, of course, is the Metro rail trip fares. And we've laid out several different options for potential recommendations we have for the board. For each of these, of course, we have no change, so keeping the status quo. We also bring up peak fares and whether or not peak fares should be eliminated or adjusted to reflect actual peak times. The current situation right now is that peak fares are charged from Metro's opening at 5 a.m. till 9:30 a.m. In the mornings, and then from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. On weekday afternoons, as well as between 12 and 2 a.m. on weekends nights. So obviously, so this is something Barbara and I talked about. We don't, I think it's pretty clear that 5 a.m. really isn't a peak hour in terms of the number of people riding the Metro at the time. And one of the ideas that we have is adjusting that to make it a little bit more reflective of when peak service and peak ridership actually happen. You can see in both, for all of these recommendations or these ideas, there are columns on why, you know, pros for the, you know, reasons why this might be a good idea, reasons why it might not be a good idea, and then some very basic potential revenue impact estimates. In addition to peak fares, sort of we look at different fare models that we've seen across different American cities. Most American cities do have a flat fare, but Barbara and I at least agree, and we'd love to get your input. It doesn't seem like an option that's really suitable for DC particularly, given that DC is a city where a lot of people are commuting very far, and we have to balance needs of being sort of a city transit system as well as sort of a commuter rail system.
And one of the forum that I went to with all of the transit executives from maybe half of these systems said that definitely distance-based pricing is the best practice. That's what's, you know. There are, but a lot of the ones that have flat also are subsidized heavily to support the flat fare.
Is it all right if I sort of run through this and then we'll get the questions? All right. So based on sort of distance-based pricing, there are a few ways to think about that. One is the idea of a base fare plus a fixed per station price. So instead of charging people on their physical distance, you charge people based on, you know, you go four or five stops, each stop costs an extra, you know, 25 cents, then you add that to a certain base fare, and there's your fare. That's a pretty simple calculation for riders, but of course stations aren't all equally spaced out. There's the idea of a zone system. A zone system is an idea that's been tested in several other cities. That's also a relatively simple calculation. And it especially benefits riders who stay within their zone. The difficulty there is in defining zones, where they should start, where they should end. And then, of course, riders who'd be impacted, who have short commutes but cross the border of a zone and therefore would have to pay a higher price. And then, of course, there's the status quo, which is distance-based. So, let's see. In addition to sort of those trip fare options, we look at pass options. So as you already know, there are several select pass options already on the website available for
two.
So there are two select pass
two.
Options. And then other non-select pass options, I
believe.
Some of the ideas that we have, and of course this is not exhaustive, are including adding a three-day pass, which would cater well for tourists or other visitors in this city. Of course, that would need to be priced at a low enough price point so that it would remain attractive for those people, but could potentially increase ridership. And then, of course, adding more select pass price points so that it would cater to riders' different needs and different commuting schedules, if you will. Moving on to bus. Bus fares are obviously calculated a little differently than Metro fares. There's sort of a flat rate, $1.75. Currently, which is a relatively low price compared to other cities, that benefits riders very well. However, people have pointed out, including Barbara, that $1.75, first of all, does leave a big operational shortfall in Metro's budget, and it's also cumbersome for operators to have to give change to.
Well, they don't. No, they don't give change, but
customers have to have exact change.
They have to beg for change or whatever
right.
from somebody else.
Raising bus fares, it's, obviously, at a certain point, we all know that every couple of years Metro does raise fares, and we should develop recommendations on what we think are appropriate fares if they were to raise them at some point. So you can feel free to look at some of the other recommendations. Another one are bus passes. There is no bus-only select pass, to our surprise. No pass that sort of caters to regular bus riders who don't ride the metro, just ride the bus for their commutes. So that's something we feel there's a lot of potential in. And then moving on to bus and rail transfers, we actually are sort of responding to the comments. So there's a two-hour window during which people can make discounted transfers between rail and bus. Extending that window could be an interesting idea. Mm-hmm. Other cities actually offer free transfers between rail and bus or bus to rail, and obviously there are difficulties doing that in our system, but it's just an idea that we could potentially study and consider. And then a few more ideas relating to parking and refunds that we'd love to get your input on, including discounts for our seniors and our community with our riders with disabilities.
We didn't put anything about increasing in that. A lot of stations, there are a lot of different prices out there. Now, I don't happen to see them. I go to the stations that always have the same price, and it's $4.85, and I don't know how big a deal it would be if they just charge $5 instead of $4.85. It's not a cash thing, but I think of $4.85 as being $5. we probably should add that as an increase.
Absolutely.
But there are other areas that either, you may have one of them, I'm not sure, that it's one of the Maryland areas. There are some fixed rules and laws or something about what the parking prices are. That's all right. I'm not going to put. Yeah, parking. I can't remember where. Not yours? Okay. Got it. Okay. Anyway, so I guess there is one for. I guess we don't know enough to make a recommendation because we don't understand why they're all so different now. It might be some things we can't even change, or maybe we can.
Essentially this document, it's not meant to be exhaustive at all. It's meant to be a starting point from which we can gather more ideas and gather more inputs. I think our goal is to have a formalized sort of recommendation by the next MAD meeting.
Right, but we really need input, in the next 2 weeks before the budget meeting, the budget committee gets together again. Well, that's not 2 weeks, that's 1 week, isn't it? 1 week, so that we don't want to come back in next month with something that doesn't represent what you want to do. So we need a lot of input. We have asked a couple times, but it's kind of emailing. It's our just kind of free form give input. So we gave you a template to kind of help us. So Clarence has been unavailable lately, but he is our chair, so we'll let him speak first. Which was ruled out when we did the budget cycle.
On the base fare plus fixed expectation on the rail, that one, there are some stops that where in which there are different number of fares between different. For example, for Cotton, the Gallery Place, particularly Red Line, there's a different number of stops that you take the other.
But you know what? The smart trip card doesn't know that. They just know where you got on and where you get off. I see. I guess you'd have to make an assumption. I would guess it would be the shortest path, but it would be the shortest path because why would anybody intentionally go out of their way so they could pay more? That's a free. Well, no, that's used to be if you wanted to go from one to the other, you had to get off at Farragut West and then walk over to Farragut North and get on, and you'd have two fares, both have a base fare. but they changed it so that if you go between them, there is no extra fee. Yeah, it's a virtual transfer or something they called it. Let me go ahead and take. Ken has a comment from the public. Can you need to come to the microphone again?
It was just a. Well, my name is Kenneth Mitchell. It's just a short. On here, you mentioned there's no current pass caters to regular bus riders. There's the regional bus pass, which is $17.50. Basically, it's like.
Yeah. So, I'm sorry, but I should have clarified that. That was meant to specifically be sort of local or regular buses. The website makes a distinction between the regional buses and the sort of the rest of the bus system.
Well. I've bought the pass before. Basically, like, it's $1.75. It's basically, if you were to go to work, you know, Monday through Friday, to and from work, it covers it, but then it's 7 days, so, you know, if you want to go out on Friday or Saturday or another trip, and it works on ART, Metro Bus, Ride-On, basically all the, you know, it just doesn't work if you're taking an express bus to, like, the airport, Dulles,
right.
Or,
right.
So.
Have you found the pass useful, and you found it?
Yeah, I thought it was useful, except for the fact that if you add it in the station using... I guess cash, or sorry, a credit card, or buying it there, it's like pretty much instantaneous. But if you buy it like online, it takes a while to actually, because I literally one day bought the $3.60 short trip rail pass, and I bought the bus pass on my phone, and literally one kicked in immediately, and the other kicked in like almost 4 days literally later. So, but, and I used the bus and metro regularly, so I was surprised it took so long. But it was on the weekend, so who knows. Thank you.
Good to know.
Sorry. One other thing. At least with the bus pass, I think the biggest problem to me is the fact there's no free transfer. Basically, like the biggest problem with the current fare structure is the fact that it's a one system thing. We all pay taxes into and all that, but it's kind of just separate, like, oh, I live near a metro station, great, but if I live near a bus, it's like I'm not really treated the same. If you treated one system, I guess you get the maximum, I think, usage out of it, and maybe efficiency too. So, yeah, because, you know, like, to me, it's like if you have a car, you know, you have the whole car, you have all the usage of it, as opposed to, like, you know, taking out seats, oh, you can't sit there, and that kind of thing. If you use the car to its fullest, I think if you treat the system using it as the fullest potential, you could see a lot more efficiency.
I was thinking we did have something for combination, but I don't know that maybe we talked about it and didn't get it on here. I know that the Select Pass has the combination, but it only is, again, a one-way combination. It's if you buy a rail Select Pass, you get free. You can buy a $45 addition for unlimited bus. So it is a combination pass. But when only we had two fares and it didn't fit very many people. So that I do think. Some good points there.
And just sort of briefly on your point, it is, at least it would strike me as kind of annoying that every 7 days you have to go reload your pass. And they don't have anything for a longer time period.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good to know. Yeah.
I would say, in general, I do like the idea of some weird combination of zoning systems, because I think if you take a commute every single day, you know what your fare price is. You get familiar with playing the obscure $4.85. Like, it just budgets that in.
Yeah.
But I think what it does do is it does remove using the metro outside of your regular routine, and like all of metro becomes treated as like a larger commuter rail versus, for me, it's my means of transportation within the city. And I think that's a place where in which I may not always, if I'm going to a friend's place or I'm going to a bar place, I'm not paying the same amount all the time. And so that makes it weird in terms of calculating, whereas if it was zoned within a certain structure of, like, this isn't the district price, this is the district coming into Maryland, this is the district coming into Virginia, or wherever else we break up the zones, it makes a simplification on that end for those people.
Yeah, I think it's what seems to have brought up, though, is that if you go from whatever the last one is in D.C. to the first one in Maryland, you've crossed a zone. I know that Portland, where I'm from, had a zone system when it started its light rail, and they have years ago abandoned it. And I don't know why. I did find it confusing, but I think that in a sense, the per station thing is a zone based. Well, it's distance based, But it's like if you can say, oh, look, four stops, and if it's not like 17 and a half cents per station, I mean, you know, it's easy. If it's a quarter, if it's 50 cents or whatever it is, if it's really easy, it might feel simpler than, I don't know where the line is between D.C. and Maryland, or maybe it's cast to be finer than that, you know, like the far out parts of Maryland versus the closer, you know, or like, you know, there's a big difference between how far away Ballston is or Roslyn compared to how, where Huntington is. And there's both in Virginia anyway. Anyway, I don't know. We have 15 more minutes. We had other things we wanted to discuss, but I know it's important. We don't have the option to be late with our recommendations. So any suggestions on how we proceed or what you want to say? Go ahead, Colin.
Well, I don't necessarily have a specific fair policy recommendation, but I would say that probably, I mean, in my opinion, the most important thing to consider when considering any of these is the impact on people who are living and commuting from, you know, the outskirts, who have, you know, schedules that they can't change. I mean, I have the advantage of a very flexible schedule. Mm-hmm. So if I see that there's something, you know, a situation or I want to avoid peak fares, I can do that, but not everyone has that advantage.
Right.
Also,
and that was the result of the peak of the peak.
The peak of the peak, right,
that,
yeah.
They found out that people told them, you know, I don't really have a lot of choice. Yeah. I have to be there at this time.
Right.
You know, if I come early, I just sit around and yeah, a longer day.
And, you know, also, you know, a 15, 20, 25 cent change in fare probably isn't going to make or break me, but there are people for whom that is a huge mm-hmm. hit mm-hmm. when it adds up. And so, you know, again, I think that's the population that we need to be thinking about when we're thinking about fare changes. And then we think about things like tourists and, you know, but most of us are, you know, we're going to adapt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just think we have to kind of put it in perspective.
Yeah, we have to. We, just as we know we're never going to make up the deficit, there are checks and balances in the system that we will not, Title VI does not allow us to differentially impact low income versus others. So we know that if we do something that comes out with that result, that won't happen. So, but we can keep it in mind, but we don't have to police ourselves. You know, we just to keep it in mind. We don't have to rule something out assuming it won't pass the test. But
right.
Something like, I think that, for instance, the 175 to 2 is a huge jump. On the other hand, it's also, when you look at what else other people have, it's one of the lowest. So anyway, I shouldn't make you put yours up because supposedly this is your discussion. So we're running out of time. So I guess how do we get from where we are to where we're trying to go? Any Clarence or Sitsa, do we want to just say everybody, we'll send this too because we have some people not here. They asked us, we spent a lot of time trying to get that. And, you know, and they said, you know, just tell us what you think are good ideas for writers. And and because, you know, maybe they can take the idea and go with it and make it to what is feasible. But they, for them to explain to us all of the different parameters and all the different numbers associated with every permutation of what we could do, they said it would be, we'd be just going forever and analysis paralysis. And,
definitely.
And one thing, if there's one thing I learned from the board meetings, is that we had one very vocal board member, not who was in the room, that said, you know, it's not important that we go to them with one recommendation, you know. They might like to hear options too. They don't want to know what did we rule out before we got to this one. So it's not that we have to say this is the one and only thing that we think is a good idea.
Yeah. I would just say, echoing Colin's sentiments and Clarence's as well, I would say, yeah, the biggest priority is just thinking about how this would impact riders, and the whole spectrum of diverse riders, and whether any one of these fare models would necessitate a fare increase that would be really harmful for certain riders, or beneficial for certain riders. That's sort of the perspective we're trying to look at this from.
Especially when you talk about passes, what we've all heard a lot about, that bus riders, that the people that have the lowest incomes often are riding the bus. There are also a lot of people riding the bus that are not low income, the people that are in, some of the D.C. people. And so passes don't necessarily appeal to somebody that is really going check to check and day to day. But it might to someone who has more disposable income. And they're still in the same area. That they can, the select pass is something they can do, and they can buy it ahead by a month. Maybe we don't have a 30-day bus pass because traditionally they didn't want to put out a month's worth of fares on the first day of the month. So that's one thing about the pass.
Question.
Certainly.
When you all are thinking and talking about this, I mean, are you doing it in the context of, as you've talked a little bit, of other riders and sort of, their experiences and thinking about it? I mean, I think of what this gentleman shared with the group and how that's important. And I know that I've heard, for example, about riders who stay on the bus and transfer from bus to bus to bus in order to keep the $1.75 fare instead of getting on the train, and that on the train, they would have been able to get there, like, let's say, in half the time or whatever. But it would cost an extra dollar or an extra two. In that, those, to me, I mean, trying to figure out or thinking about stuff like that and how to address that kind of situation, because it has different impacts. I mean, another just thing when we talk about the peak, that's a demand conversation, right? I mean, it's like all of it is subsidized. Let's just back up with that. All of this is subsidized.
True.
So all of this is subsidized, and we all have to pay for the extra in our taxes. I mean, that's just a fact. We all pay for it. So it's all subsidized, all of the rides. But the peak is a demand discussion. I mean, because you have it up there, but that's when it really is more about it's not about the demand during the morning. It's actually about the demand after 10. So it's trying to encourage more people by lowering the fare. It's not that the peak, I mean, I don't like to call it a peak. I mean, it's really the regular fare. I mean, the time after or in between when there's not as much utilization is when we're trying to really encourage more people to use the system, because we're running it at even a lower utilization, and if we can increase the utilization, it's like literally, it just helps the system because we want the system to continue to run.
Is that working?
I think to a certain degree, and that's the other thing that I think about when I hear you guys talking, and I know you don't want to, there's so much, the planning department in Metro has got so much information around this and around trying to encourage more people to ride in those, and that's a lot of what the passes are about as well. The passes are about encouraging people to ride in those off periods of time, and trying to at least pick up a little bit of that. A lot of it is around getting better utilization and outside times. A lot of effort goes into that, but that's still not. It's still not there. I mean, the utilization in those in-between times. And that's also a large part, as you guys were talking about before, of the conversation about the evening hours. Because that's what was shared with us as a board, was that there's not a lot of people riding when you look at the data in after 12 and from 10 to 12. And so that is a part of what's going on in that conversation too. So, and I also just, when I look at what you have here, I see two different things that you're doing. Like on the first one with the rail, you're looking at
adjusting and kind of making it simpler, but then on the bus you have on here, you're talking about increasing fare. So I just, with the 175 to the 2, I mean, if they can be sort of separated out, I mean, I think that would be a good thing, which is, you know, talking about sort of how we do this process versus, you know, pricing and the money that we're charging, that would be helpful. That would be very helpful.
Yeah, that's a good point, because most of the time, if it was simple, it may not be any kind of revenue enhancing, or it might be revenue enhancing, but it's not rider friendly. It's like I was always taught that systems can either be fast, good, or what's the other one? Cheap. Pick two. You can't get them all. And so to be simple and equitable, you know, and affordable. One thing I will comment on, that I spent 2 3-hour shifts as an MVP, a metro volunteer person, standing at a fare machine helping customers. Okay, 6 hours is not a lifetime. But when you hear the same thing 50 times in 6 hours, there's something there. I don't think the riders find our fares all that complicated. I think they find the fare machines very difficult to understand what to do. Four of them together. Okay, so we're supposed to be finishing this by 8. We're a little behind. We will get something out there and send an email to all of you, and we really entreat you to please look at it and look at it soon, because we need to move this along and prepare something that it reflects us, our opinions. So we have to have something prepared to bring back to you that you will actually vote on at the next meeting. And we are meeting a week from now. Doesn't mean we can't have phone calls or something in between times, the committee, but.
So we need any decisions by next week?
Well, it would be very helpful if we did. And knowing that, you know, I know it's hard to say do it in the next week, but, you know, if you're going to do it, you know, the day before it's due, why not just do it in the next week? So it would help.
Is this something you can share with us, like via Google Docs or some other format
that we can,
you know, kind of comment on and provide feedback
right
in the interim?
Yeah.
And it would also be great to have any analysis that the planning department has that would help inform our decision making. So to the degree that's available, I think that would be great to send our way.
Well, they said they encourage if we want to share with them this sort of thing, we're going to do that too, but we want to show it to you first. So
great.
We can do that. So we've lost our opportunity to share our ideas and announcements. I didn't give Will a chance to talk about customer service, but we talked about two of the things I wanted to, was late night service and MVP. Do you have anything else you need to announce?
Not specifically. Okay. I just want to look into a little bit more about one of the conversations we had about overcrowding and the single track during the safe track, as far as, you know, getting more personnel out to let people know that if there's only one side of the track that they should be on, maybe someone at the entrance of the station letting them know, and maybe some signage, you know, things like that.
You know, I think we talked about that, though.
We did. So
yeah,
I think we need to just move forward and make a suggestion.
Okay.
That.
Hope to hear from you then.
But yeah, other than that, not much. I don't know if anybody else knew that. Remember, we were talking about the excuse me, The Metro Rail Safety Committee meeting that was in Annapolis for the Maryland committee members, that's been canceled for now, and I think you're waiting for DC to make some type of decision, because we got a message from Bob saying it was canceled. So.
I don't think I even was aware of it. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, Bob sent something out about 2-3 weeks ago, I think.
Okay.
And then I saw your message about the forwarding, I guess, to Lynn about the town hall meetings and the RAC presence, so happy to hear about that. So.
Okay.
That's it.
All right. Any other announcements now that we're over time? Sorry. It's my fault. It is. I'm sure it is. All right. Thank you very much. Unless I hear an objection, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you all for your participation and all of you out there, too. And Mr. Augustine in particular. Thank you. If we have any Maryland member that hasn't met this man, they should. I think our Maryland people are gone tonight.